Yeah, I'm very meticulous. I do the same sort of work I've always done with engineering. A tremendous amount of detail, a lot of historical references. I use newspaper archives a lot. What I typically do is I'll go in and I'll find some weather event, like an incredibly hot day which occurred, in 1921, and then I'll go and find newspaper articles from that date and where people were talking about it.
Fascinating. So we interviewed a David Evans. Do you know him out of Australia?
The name sounds
Yeah, really
familiar, but
cool
I can't
scientist, and
place.
I think he's working on his third book, arguing that the man-made global warming thing is not right. And when we had him on the show, it's been a few years now, but he had all kinds of cool graphs like you do, and he actually showed where a lot when they started to a lot of the people that keep making this thing, roll on are using water temperature and stuff like that. And when they do the math, and he said they just changed the numbers in a lot of the water temperature readings. They just changed them, he said.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, they're pushing an agenda and they're rewriting history. And the amount of bad data practices I've seen are like literally, like say, if Enron did something like this, people would be in jail. They're not the numbers you get from the government about climate bear no resemblance to reality.
So this is just, can you talk a little bit about how big you think this is, and what's the chances of it prevailing, this argument, this
it's massive. I mean,
it's
this
really
is.
big, huh? It's a big deal.
Yeah, and so what it really goes back to, the key thing is in the first year that Obama was president, the EPA passed this rule. It was the CO2 endangerment finding, which has become the legal basis for all legal action to shut down fossil fuel industry in the United States.
What's the name of it
And
again?
the CO2 endangerment finding.
And who did that?
The EPA.
Oh, EPA. Okay, good for them. All right.
And so that's sort of the key thing, which makes it possible for climate alarmists to do damage. And so it was one of the things which President Trump was working on, was trying to get this EPA endangerment finding revisited. And I think that's one of the reasons why they've been working so hard to keep him busy with this, Russia collusion thing and the impeachment thing. I mean, I think they're trying to keep him from accomplishing his agenda,
Of
right?
course, of course.
And I think this is one of the key things. They've been working very hard just to keep him distracted, keep him busy. And he appointed Will Happer, a friend of mine, and he's a professor at Princeton, one of the best radiation physicists in the world to do this. And
To do what?
well
Get the
work
CO2 thing reversed?
well to create a panel of people who are
Wow.
going to
Sure.
analyze, to do an independent analysis of it and determine whether it was valid.
And the Trump administration appointed this fellow?
Yeah,
Wow.
he was head of emerging technologies at the National Security Council, and President Trump appointed him about a year ago. But Will, like I said, is a friend of mine. He was getting undermined by White House staffers. White House staffers didn't want to have anything to do with this. They didn't want controversy ahead of election, so they were just keeping him from doing his job. So Will just resigned a couple of weeks ago from the National Security
But I
Council.
thought President Trump was more anti, I mean,
Yeah, he is anti, but he was relying
oh,
on
his staff
Dr.
too.
He was relying on Dr. Happer to take care of this, but he had the White House staffers prevented Dr. Happer from doing anything, so the efforts has been shut down.
Wow.
And So I've been working hard to raise awareness of the CO2 endangerment finding, because that is the key thing. Mm-hmm. You know, forget Paris. I mean, and these climate accords, those things are meaningless, nonsense. Sure. Yeah. Those are just political propaganda. But the thing that is important, because it's a legal document, is the CO2 endangerment finding. And that is the key thing to bringing down the scam, is getting that reversed. So I'm doing everything I can to raise awareness to get people to understand what the problem is and get them to demand to their Congress people and everyone else, we've got to get the CO2 endangerment finding revisited and do an honest analysis of it, because there was never any honest science.
Was that a passed law? So this would have to be a congressional thing to reverse that?
No, it wasn't a law. I mean, it was a mandate.
Just an EPA thing.
The
president could overturn that with an executive order if he knew about it.
Yeah, you know, President Trump definitely knows about it.
Oh, he does know.
It's a very difficult thing politically.
Ah.
Congress gave the EPA, a long time ago, Congress gave the EPA authority to regulate pollutants.
Uh-huh, sure.
And so the EPA classified carbon dioxide as a pollutant, which is absurd. under the law which Congress passed, they're doing what's completely in their legal authority. So it's not something that President Trump, you know, President can easily reverse himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he needs to develop a basis for it in order for this to happen.
Yeah.
And they've been, you know, climate alarmists have been extremely effective at shutting down people like Will Happer and all other avenues. So people like me are trying to raise public awareness, and I think I've been fairly effective at it. My YouTube videos get about 1 million views a month now. So I'm reaching a lot of people, you know, and that's my primary message these days is, mm-hmm. Let's revisit the CO2 endangerment finding and get an honest scientific analysis done of it.
Do you have any idea
who the
people were that appointed this, your friend Happer, who was kind of one of us, a good guy, who appointed him? Who had the vision?
President Trump appointed him.
President Trump himself?
Yeah. He was a presidential appointment.
Wow. But you're arguing that with all this Russia nonsense and now impeachment stuff, that they keep him so busy that he can't maybe keep his tabs on all this stuff that he really believes in?
Oh, yeah. I think that's been a huge part of why they're doing this, is they're keeping him so occupied with this stuff. It makes it much harder for him to accomplish his agenda.
Which they don't
want,
right?
They've been fairly successful at doing that, too.
Sure. You know, the wall and everything, all the stuff that he campaigned on. I mean, it's just tough for him to get anything done. He's just, you know, talking to lawyers all day, you know.
Yeah, that's all the press has talked about. You know, Russia impeachment, you know, they've had a tremendously successful, and all the noise they created ahead of the election last year, they were able to give control of the House of Representatives to the Democrats, which allowed them to create more noise and more, you know, roadblocks.
And did you see where Pelosi or somebody changed some kind of a thing, a very fine point in the whistleblower thing that's kind of screwing things up too with this whole Ukraine thing?
Yeah.
You know, it's hardball up there, isn't it? And watching, woo, man.
Well, you know the guy who discovered this change in the whistleblower?
Yeah.
Forums was actually Steve McIntyre, who was the same guy who uncovered what was wrong with the Michael Mann's hockey stick. So there's interesting tie there to the climate stuff.
Tell folks what Michael Mann's hockey stick is.
Yeah, so until 20 years ago, the consensus of science, it's, you know, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, if you go back and look at the 1990 version of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's document, when they show world history, world temperature history going back 1,000 years, they showed that the planet was much warmer 800 years ago during a time called the medieval warm period. And that was followed by the Little Ice Age around, you know, 1600 through 1800, in which time, you know, Earth got very cold, glaciers were growing, and then we warmed up again coming out of the Little Ice Age, which starting around 1850, and that was what everyone accepted. That there was never any question about that. Mm-hmm. But Michael Mann from Penn State University went and he rewrote that, and he made it so that there was no medieval warm period, there was no Little Ice Age, it was just Earth. There was just this very slow cooling from about over the past 1,000 years until about the year 1900. And then all of a sudden, everything started heating up out of control after the year 1900. And so it's called a hockey stick because it looks like a hockey stick. You have this long handle and then this short blade going upwards. Mm-hmm. And so Steve McIntyre, he's a Canadian mining engineer, and he went and did very detailed analysis of everything that was wrong with Michael Mann's work. And he's also the guy who uncovered this change in the whistleblower form, which is now being used for the impeachment. So, he's an interesting guy.
Can you tell folks just real quickly what the whistleblower thing is? It's kind of a little fly in the ointment for the Trump administration.
Yeah, well, until a couple days before this whole thing flared up, the Whistleblower Act paperwork required direct firsthand knowledge in order to file
it. Oh, to be a whistleblower, you had to say, he had to really experience it, right? Like in court, right. It can't be hearsay.
Right.
I see.
But they changed the form about 2 days before this whole thing blew up so that it could be hearsay.
So, you can't even make this stuff up, can you, Tony?
No, it's incredible.
It's just like a bad movie, man. They just changed the law saying that whistleblowers could use hearsay, and it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, the amount of bad stuff that's going on. If you look at the top of my blog, I've got an article I posted yesterday. It was really interesting. It was posted, it was an article which Harry Truman wrote on mm-hmm. December 23rd, 1963, mm-hmm. which was exactly a month after JFK was killed. Uh-huh. And actually, let me just bring it up on my blog.
And I can just read to you. Tony Heller, and his website is, I got it here, it's called realclimatescience.com. If you'd like to join the show, Patrick Timpone at OneRadioNetwork.com. It is October 2. Please pass on this link to everyone that you care about when we post it in a couple of hours, especially, God love them, your good friends, the lefty socialists who really believe this. And, you know, maybe you can encourage them to listen to this and help them to educate themselves so they just don't, you know, buy into. I just don't want to see people just get their mind, you know, co-opted. But so be sweet to them because, you know. Okay, anyway, so you wanted to read something, Tony?
Yeah, so Harry Truman wrote this on December 23rd, 1963. Mm-hmm. For some time, I have been disturbed by the way the CIA has been diverted from its original assignment. Mm-hmm. It has become an operational and at times a policy-making arm of the government. Mm-hmm. This has led to trouble and may have compounded our difficulties in several explosive areas. And so keep in mind, he wrote this 1 month the day after JFK was assassinated,
right,
which I found very interesting.
Well, as you probably know, we've had a lot of JFK talk over many, many, many years, and I think it's a fair analysis. I can't say for sure, but the experts or the real researchers say that this agency had a role in his, you know, his demise.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, boy, but Truman got on that. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was really interesting, and this came, you know, just 2 years after Eisenhower's warning about the military-industrial complex.
Right. And of course, Kennedy got the famous speech, secret societies, right? Whew.
Yeah. So there was, you know, the presidents were aware that there was a lot of really bad stuff going on.
Sure. And of course, Bobby Kennedy's famous quote was, "We're going to bust the CIA into 1,000 pieces." So you know. And he's no longer here, so it's definitely a hard ball up there, Tony Heller. One thing I wanted to touch on before we get to some emails is this idea of global warming, as we're being sold through the media, through the Weather Channel and all that, has been affecting hurricanes, and we're just going to have more of them and more, you know, weird weather because of global warming. I mean, that's a big deal, too.
Yeah, that's just complete nonsense. And it was interesting because I went to a talk at Colorado State University about 10 years ago, and it was by Scott Denning, who was an IPCC lead author. He's a climate alarmist himself, and he was asked that question. He said, will global warming cause more extreme weather? And he said, no. He said, there's no theoretical basis for believing it. He says, some people believe that it may cause more, a few more, you know, may cause the most powerful hurricanes to become more powerful. But otherwise, things like all these other claims we hear about global warming, he says, there's no theoretical basis for it. And if you understand global warming theory, you know, a warming planet should have less extreme weather. And the reason is because the Arctic warms faster than the equator does. And so that means there's a smaller temperature differential between the Arctic and the equator, which means the Earth's heat engine is diminished. And the reason we get hurricanes and other storms is because heat is being transferred from the warmer regions towards, you know, at lower latitudes to the poles. That's what hurricanes are all about. And if the Arctic was the same temperature as the equator, we would have no hurricanes. You know, we would have no storms, we would have no weather because there would be no heat engine. So as the Arctic warms, we should get less extreme weather. And if you look through the historical record, you can see that this is true. The United States used to have much more extreme weather than we have now. The hurricane, you know, in September of 1900, there was this incredible hurricane which hit Galveston, killed 10,000 people. You know, they had a 17-foot storm surge, pretty much wiped out the whole city.
10,000, wow.
Yeah, it was the worst natural disaster in U.S. history. And after that hurricane, they went in, they built the Galveston seawall, and they raised the city about 3 or 4 feet. They came in, literally took every single house in the city, put it up on stilts, and then brought in huge amounts of dirt and raised the city about 3 or 4 feet to reduce the amount of damage from future hurricanes. And then Galveston got hit by another major hurricane in 1915. And then in 1926, Miami was destroyed by a major hurricane. That was the most inflation adjusted, most expensive natural disaster in U.S. history. And in 1886, there used to be a city on the Texas coast called Indianola. Indianola was hit by a major hurricane in 1886. It was the second major hurricane they'd been hit in several years. Wiped the city out. They never rebuilt the city. That's why you no longer hear about Indianola, Texas. And if you go through in 1938, a massive hurricane hit just east of New York City and killed hundreds of people in New England. You know, Providence, Rhode Island was under 8 feet of water. And we have a long history of hurricanes like that. In 1954, the East Coast was hit by three major hurricanes, including the last two to hit New England. And then there was one in October. For some reason, I'm usually really good with names. For some reason, I'm not this morning. Right. It might have been because I've been up working since 2 a.m. But anyway, so Hurricane Hazel hit the Carolinas, did a huge amount of damage. Then it went up into Canada, killed more than 100 people in Toronto. It made a huge storm surge on Lake Ontario, killed more than 100 people in Toronto, which it was the deadliest hurricane in Canada's history. And then in 1969, we had Hurricane Camille, came and hit the Texas-Louisiana border. You know, and that was, you know, the winds that were probably over 200 miles an hour from that. 1935 hurricane was the most intense hurricane in U.S. history. It hit the Florida Keys. Blew trains 30 feet off the tracks.
Wow. So what you're saying is there's just a lot of evidence to show that the idea that because of, and since 1970 or whenever the global people say it's beginning to warm or whatever, what year do they choose anyway? But anyway, the idea that there, it's worse now is just not true.
No, yeah, there's no factual basis to that at all. Heat waves are way down in the United States. Tornadoes are down. Hurricanes are down. Major hurricanes are down. You know, these claims, there's no basis to any of them. You can't support any of these claims that extreme weather is getting worse because it's not true.
So that's probably another reason why these people, the same people, own all the media. And I, you know, I've been in the media 50 years. I know they own them all, almost all of them. So they do Hurricane so-and-so all 24/7 all the time and really make a big deal out of it for weeks.
Right. You get cable news now, which does these things over and over, and they bring it into people's living rooms. Yeah. And so people imagine that they're part of it, right? They feel the people's pain. But they don't know about the horrible hurricanes we've had in the past. They don't know about the Galveston hurricane. 10,000 people died. There were bodies washing up on the shores for months afterwards. They had people going out there, looters were going out there, and they would go out and find the bodies on the beach. They'd find, you know, married women and cut their fingers off to steal their rings. One guy was found with like 27 fingers in his pocket with diamond rings on.
What year was
this? This was 1900.
1900, my goodness.
They had, the sheriffs were out there shooting people, shooting looters on site. The scene in Galveston just literally sounded like hell on earth. I mean, you read descriptions of survivors, the things they went through. You know, trapped up on the second floor of their houses with the water 15 feet deep for hours, watching their children drown. It was just unbelievable. You know, it was literally hell on earth what these people went through. And, you know, similar stories. You know, the three of the 10 deadliest hurricanes, Atlantic hurricanes, occurred between 1775 and 1780, you know, around the time of the Revolutionary War.
Really?
The deadliest Atlantic hurricane occurred in 1780. It killed 23,000 people.
Wow.
And in that same year, a Pacific typhoon killed more than 100,000 people.
Where did those two come in shore on? The first one?
The 1780 hurricane didn't actually hit the United States. It hit the Caribbean.
Okay.
And it played a big role in the Revolutionary War because that hurricane wiped out dozens of British ships.
So that was
a key moment in the Revolutionary War, was that hurricane. And there were huge hurricanes 1775, 1776 in the Atlantic, too.
And the big one,
excuse me
a second. The 100,000 one you mentioned, I just want to clear where that one came in.
That was in the Pacific. That was a Pacific typhoon. I don't know what the location was.
Yeah, you're going to say something else? Go ahead.
Yeah, there's other things about U.S. history that people don't know. Is that like the Jamestown colony was largely wiped out by drought. There was a terrible drought. It was one of the worst droughts in U.S. history for several years. They didn't have any food, and then the ones who weren't killed, you know, who weren't wiped out by the drought, you know, Roanoke colony, they were killed in an Indian massacre. So almost everyone from Jamestown, the original Jamestown settlers, died. And similar in the Pilgrims in Plymouth, they were nearly wiped out by drought too. And people don't know this. Very few people know this. But the Northeastern, prior to about 1970, the Northeastern U.S. was in drought most of the time. If you go and look at the official drought records, it was very dry. And the 1960s were incredibly dry. New York City almost ran out of water several times in the 1960s. New York and Philadelphia were fighting over water in the Delaware River. And no one remembers these things anymore. We've gotten used to thinking of the Northeast as being wet, which it has been for the last 50 years. Mm. But prior to 50 years ago, the Northeast tended to be very dry, and they used to have very bad forest fires.
Can you just imagine what the climate folks would be doing now if these kinds of things would be going on? Oh my goodness, this would be like, we're going to all die tomorrow, right?
New Jersey, you know, 56 years ago, used to have huge forest fires. Well, you don't hear about forest fires in New Jersey anymore. And you know when the worst forest fires in U.S. history occurred? It was in 1871. You know, everybody knows about the Chicago fire, which occurred, the first week of October in 1871. But what they don't know about is that on that same day that Chicago burned down, there were massive fires all around Lake Michigan and Lake Huron, which killed thousands of people. Around Green Bay, particularly, there's one city, Peshtigo, Wisconsin. More than 1,000 people in that town burned to death in the fire on the same day that Chicago burned down. There was a tremendous firestorm, and people, it just came out of nowhere. People went to church. It was a Sunday morning. People went to church, came out of church. They heard this incredible roar out in the sky. This huge mass of fire came in. The stories from there are unbelievable. You know, people, bodies were found. People had melted coins in their pocket. You know, people jumped in the river to try to sort of take their family. People went in water wells and were found boiled alive in water wells. Yeah. And, wow. And this occurred. These fires occurred all around, you know, Lake Michigan and Lake Huron. Like I said, dozens of towns burned to the ground. You know, we don't have things like that anymore. You know, in Wisconsin, nobody thinks about forest fires in Wisconsin anymore.
Yeah. Well, one of the big ones, too, again, before emails, last kind of graph we'll talk about, Tony, is the sea level rise. I mean, that's a big one with the environmentalists and documentaries and what's going to happen when, you know, the water gets, you know, rises a foot, and my goodness, you're going to lose New Orleans and, you know, and all of that. What's your take, and what does your research show with sea level rising?
All right. Well, like I say, you know, I'm a geologist, right? And sea level's been rising for 20,000 years. 20,000 years ago, sea level was about 400 feet lower than it is now. Florida was more than twice as large as it is now. The first people are believed to have come to America. They walked across the Bering Strait around that time because sea level was very low, and they were able to, you know, walk on a land bridge from Siberia to Alaska. And then the ice age ended and sea level started rising. It rose very quickly from about 12,000 years ago until about 8,000 years ago. And then it slowed way down after that. And so over the last 8,000 years, sea level rise has been fairly steady and had never stopped. It's been rising. And so it continues to rise now at about the same level at rate it has been for a long time. And we can see this in tide gauges. There's tide gauge at Lower Manhattan at the Battery,
right,
which they have records going back to before Abraham Lincoln was president. And if you look at the rise in sea level, you can see that it's rising now at the same rate it was 150 years ago.
Really, per year, the amount of height.
Right, yeah. So at New York, it's about 2.8 millimeters per year. Mm-hmm. That's mostly due to the fact that the land in the East Coast is subsiding. If you look at tide gauge in California and the West Coast, you see essentially very little or no sea level rise. That's because the land's not subsiding. But there's no indication anywhere in the world that sea level rise is accelerating. What you see is that sea level is rising at the same rate it was 100 years ago. So these claims that sea level rise, you know, they always talk about sea level rise is an indication that the Earth's warming. It's not true. All that sea level rise indicates is that we're no longer in an ice age. It's like, you know, imagine you put a glass and you know, put ice in your glass, right? And you put it there on the table. The ice cube's going to melt, and it's going to keep melting over time, right? And so there'll be less ice and more water mm-hmm. in the glass mm-hmm. over time, mm-hmm. right? Does that mean that the room's warming up? No. It just means that the temperature in the room is above freezing. Right? And so it's the same argument. We're not in an ice age. The average temperature in the Arctic is above freezing, so we're having ice melting. It doesn't mean that the Earth's warming. It's a really fundamental, you know, misunderstanding of science. People who say that sea level rise indicates warming, it doesn't. It just means that we're not in an ice age. When we get to a time when sea level stops rising, that means we're going back into an ice age, and that's when we have real problems.
You better put your woolies on, dude. Jason writes in, he's in Detroit. Tony, can you outline why they've chosen CO2 as the boogeyman? Is it because they can assign a carbon footprint to each human and then tax them accordingly?
Well, CO2, just going back further, CO2 is a greenhouse gas, and increased amounts of CO2 in the atmosphere will cause some warming. I don't think that there's very many serious scientists who disagree with that. So there is a legitimate scientific basis to CO2. You know, the two primary greenhouse gases are water vapor is far and away the most important one, and then carbon dioxide is the second most important one. So there's a legitimate scientific basis, but at the same time, that comment is absolutely correct. CO2, it is, you know, comes out of fossil fuel burning. So it allows, if you can control the energy supply, you control everything about the society's functioning, as we were talking about at the beginning of the thing. And plus the fact, you also can control individuals. I mean, at some point, they're going to say, you know, people exhale carbon dioxide. And that's a threat to our climate, right? So there's a much more sinister side to this, which hasn't yet been revealed. But at some point, they're undoubtedly going to head down that path, too.
We've done quite a bit of many shows over the years with a wonderful man who's not with us any longer about money and, you know, the whole thing. And we've been doing it for years, Tony. And he told us long ago, maybe 10 years ago, Al Gore he was involved with all kinds of kind of really strange things with the Chicago Board of Trade, making tons of money allegedly trying to with the carbon credits being back and forth, and I think he got caught with that one and had to drop that whole thing. But he was deep involved, according to research of people, with the whole carbon credit thing, and lots of money.
Yeah, there's you know, there's so many different aspects to this whole thing. I think the most important thing is control of the energy supply.
Yeah. Here's one from Peter. He's in Victoria. Did Tony Heller read the complete IPCC report, or was it a combination of research and fragments of suggestions from colleagues? I'm in Australia. If the state and city is confusing. Oh, he's in Australia. Okay. You understand the question?
Yeah, well, I haven't read any of the reports in their entirety. I mean, I've read key sections of them relating to the work research I'm doing. You know, so I've gotten a lot of information. You know, one thing that's been interesting is how the IPCC report has changed over time. Like I mentioned before, the 1990 long-term global temperature graph looks completely different from the current one. They don't bear any resemblance at all anymore since the hockey stick came along. But, you know, that's been an important source of information. Most of my research has just been based on, you know, typically what I do is I get up, I look on Google News for global warming or climate change stories and just see what the latest claims are that the press is pimping that day, which always gives me a hint. And, you know, looking at old newspaper articles, but I spent a lot of time looking at the temperature record. And recently I've been looking a lot at the temperature record from Australia, too.
Yeah.
I know quite a bit about that. I was down in Australia on a speaking tour a few years ago. And I didn't make it to Melbourne, unfortunately, but I spent a lot of time in Canberra and in Sydney. And Australia's another interest of mine, and I'm hoping to come back down there again soon. So similar things have been done with the Australian temperature. The key thing they do in the Australian temperature record is the Bureau of Meteorology hides all the data before 1910.
Oh, good.
Australia was extremely hot in the 19th century. They had some incredibly hot years. And January of 1896 was the hottest month on record in Southeast Australia. And so the Bureau of Meteorology down there just hides the data. They hide everything before 1910 now, so people don't see it anymore.
Yeah. It doesn't change much around the world what governments will do to promote their thing. Here's somebody wants to know, do you have a firm date for your new software?
It's going to require a lot of work before I can commercialize it. I'm using it extensively right now myself, and it's a key part of my current research, but I've got to figure out exactly what I want to do with it before I commercialize it. So I think it's still months off before I would even think about doing that. I'm also talking to some investors about a possibility of getting some support to develop this, because I think it has applications way beyond climate. I think it'd be really good for stock, you know, financial people, and other a lot of other applications, you know, scientific applications. Anyone who needs to graph a lot of data and do it quickly.
Yeah. Can you stick around a few more minutes?
Sure.
Okay. I want to take one quick break, and then we'll be back and kind of wrap it up. We have some more emails. This is Patrick Timpone, One Radio. Network.com. Good to have you along. Well, it's starting to get, you know, it's going to be, well, it's gonna, winter's coming, fall, winter's coming, and that's always fun because the change is nice. And if you would like to consider, I suggest that you look at our far infrared sauna. This is a great, great little machine that's built at a Taiwan medical university, and they've won several awards for their design, their technology. The far infrared unit is one of the best as far as scientifically can show you. Is deeply penetrated. It's very low EMFs. It has some electrical and magnetic energy coming up to the bottom of the chair, but anything that has a kind of a motor engine thing has that. You get that much driving in your car. It's, you know, it's just on your legs, and you're in the healing light of the far infrared, and you will sweat like, oh boy. It gets very, very hot, but they have two units, one on either side, so you can just use one to warm up, and I like to warm mine up and then jump in, and I can usually go 20, 30 minutes and just drenched. And it's then you have the far infrared heat, and then we know that all the, a lot of the yuck stuff comes out when you sweat. It's a very amazing detoxification, and I really attribute that one of the key reasons I've been able to keep my good health, knock on wood, for a long time. I've been using this regularly for, 10 years. It's the Relax Far Infrared Sauna. We have a special price that we can't put in print because that messes up the suggested retail price for Phil and who is the sole distributor, but it's $9.95 delivered in the lower 48. $9.95 delivered in the lower 48. Just email me if you'd like to get one. We'll hook you up. We sell them all over the world. We've shipped them to China. We've shipped them to Japan, to Korea, to Australia, to Europe, of course, and we can work it out for couple hundred bucks. We'll get it there. It'll be shipped right directly from the medical university in Taiwan where they're made, and it'll come with the plug that you can plug right in whether you live in Hamburg or in Melbourne. And so we ship them all over the world. Don't let that scare you away. Just email me and I'll hook you up. Patrick@oneradionetwork.com. The Relax Far Infrared Sauna. Dr. Richard Ulrey, authority on minerals, talks about gut bacteria, making the vitamins, and absorbing the minerals, how it all works.
We need vitamins from our gut bacteria so we can absorb minerals, and then minerals provide a resonant frequency. And those minerals carry these frequencies into the body, and multiple minerals will give you a frequency that allows all of our proteins to have individual distinct frequencies, giving that three-dimensional structure. This is where Wayne's products, Living Stream, and that's the only primary products I carry. When you do a stool test and it says you don't have any bifidobacteria, well, if you don't have any bifidobacteria, you're not going to absorb certain minerals. If you don't have any lactobacillus, you're not going to absorb certain minerals.
Here's an idea of a couple of the Living Streams you can take for what we're talking about here. The Bifido, Living Streams Multi-Blend, and the Living Minerals. So you get in the minerals, the Bifido, and the lactobacillus. And these special probiotics and minerals are all in human DNA form, and they are living alive. In our store on OneRadioNetwork.com. Wayne has told us over the years, and he's pretty careful, he doesn't criticize competition much, but you know, he basically says, if you've known how they make these probiotics that you get in little capsules in the refrigerator at the hippie food store for $50 or whatever, he said they centrifuge them and they heat them and they do all kinds of stuff, and so many of them don't survive. It's just, what's going on out there in the probiotic world is just, Wayne is quite an engineer, and he really knew what he was doing. So check them out. You can put some of them in your eyes. You can put them in your face. Put them in your ears. I made a little hemp protein thing with some spirulina as a little morning shot, and then I just opened up my little bottle of multi-blend and just put it right in there. I mean, I just use them all the time. You know, get a few of them, get a bunch of them and use them. I don't think you can really overdo it. All the friendly guys you can get in there, I go for it. And I think my health has improved dramatically. It just keeps getting better and better. These work like probiotics are supposed to work. Living Streams in our store, OneRadioNetwork.com. If you'd like to talk to somebody to get more information, talk to Marilyn. Her telephone number, 360-912-2981. 360-912-2981 with questions. And then also, please make sure, don't order from her, because, you know, just come to our website, and so we get a little commission on the deal, and that's how we support ourselves. Don't forget, so the Vitalizer Plus from Ken Rolla quickly. Dr. Cowan talked how important it is, and Mark Circus, to structure your water. If you distill it, you definitely want to structure, even if you are owed it. Ken has a great machine called the Water Vitalizer Plus. It has organic mineral cubes, and so it'll put some naturally minerals into the water. It alkalizes it a little bit. It energizes with homeopathic enhanced water, making it more hydrating at a cellular level. They have a vortex. It looks like a little tornado right in the middle of it. Very quiet machine. It's all set up, so it'll tell you after you used it so many times if it's time to change out your mineral cube. Maybe, I don't know, once every 8, 6, 8, 9 months. It's a beautiful little machine, the Water Vitalizer Plus, and you can you get a promo code One Radio there, but you click on the golden pyramid on the front page, and that'll take you to the Water Vitalizer and get your water structured. It'll help you to hydrate yourself.
Know the source. One Radio Network.
Well, we've had quite an interesting time with Tony Heller. It is RealClimateScience.com and all kinds of videos on YouTube. Again, your YouTube channel. Let me write that down again on another page, Tony.
Yeah, it's, well, if you search for Tony Heller, you'll probably find it. I think the name of my actual channel is Tony Heller 1, just number 1.
Number 1 YouTube channel. Yeah. Still a couple more. Go ahead.
The easiest way to find it is just go to my Twitter page. It's the pinned tweet at the top of my Twitter page.
Okay. Here's an email. Recognizing the importance of controlling the world's energy production as a critical tool for global control to achieve their goals, does Tony have an opinion on what the globalist view would be on residentially distributed solar energy production? Would they favor solar power as that provides some level of individual independence?
Yeah, I actually haven't done any research into that, and I'd be just ignorant if I tried to express an opinion on it. So I think I'll take a pass on that.
Okay, fair enough. The second part of his question, there's no widespread evidence of existence or certainly implementation of free energy technologies, and it appears that it is due to some successful suppression efforts. Despite the autonomy provided by the solar power, perhaps it is tolerated for now, as globalists may think that they should always snuff the one out by blotting out the sun with geoengineering. Your thoughts on that?
I wouldn't say an opinion. Yeah.
What about free energy? There's a lot of, you know, all kinds of talk about that. You know, this guy, he had a free energy thing and people shut him down. And have you have any evidence? Have you ever seen a free energy device work?
No, I'm not a big believer in that stuff.
Neither. I mean, I've seen a lot of stuff, but you know, I just don't know what to believe with that. And I want to believe that it's possible, but you know, I don't know.
I'm pretty much a traditional science guy and raised on the laws of thermodynamics, and so I tend to believe that energy is neither destroyed or created. So
yeah,
I would probably, you know, my natural tendency is to believe that things like that probably don't exist.
But if that energy out there, maybe called spirit or chi or whatever it is, it runs everything, there should be a way to utilize that and to turn it into 120 somehow?
I don't know.
I don't know either. There's probably a way somewhere.
Okay, I'm a pretty traditional scientist.
You're a pretty scientist guy. No, I understand. Yeah. I get a little wacky. Yeah. Excuse me. I get a little wacky with that. Let's see. What is behind... Oh, getting all kinds of questions now. What's behind the emotional makeup of people that make them so willing to believe the government-dictated script book about our environment. Do they feel guilt or shame or responsible for the planet and animal suffering?
Yeah, that is an excellent
that
question.
That really is an interesting point, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's something I've thought a lot about. Mm-hmm. You know, I think one thing is just that most people have this, you know, we're born with this belief, you know, sort of instinctive belief to respect authority. You know, we have the authority of our parents, mm-hmm. we have authority of our government, and people, it's just a part of human nature. And if you look at the story of the emperor's new clothes, well, what was that story about? It was that you had government authorities telling the people that the emperor was clothed. Mm-hmm. And even though it was obvious that he wasn't, all the adults went along with the claims of the experts because they didn't feel like they were qualified to question what experts were saying. Mm-hmm. And we see the same thing with the global warming thing. No, people don't see any evidence of anything going on, but we're being told over and over again, there's a climate crisis, right? So people just, they feel like they're not in a position to question it, so they tend to push other people around with the same thing. Yeah, of course there's a climate crisis, because 97% of scientists say there's a climate crisis, so there must be a climate crisis, even if they don't see any evidence of it with their own eyes. I think that's a key part of it, but there's other parts of it too that I've thought about. It's that you know, I think it's a big part of the liberal mentality. I live in one of the most liberal cities in the country. I was raised in a very liberal household. I've lived in very liberal places almost my entire life. And in many ways, I share, you know, many liberal values. You know, I'm a vegetarian. I ride my bike everywhere. I've been an environmentalist all my
life. You're a hippie, man. What are you? Come on.
So I share a lot of those same values. But there's a tendency among liberals to feel like they're intellectually superior. You know, they don't believe in God. They believe they're intellectually superior. They believe it is their job to rescue humanity, right? It was always raised to this thing of, we have to rescue the poor brown people, right? Without our white liberals' help, these poor brown people would be doomed, and we have to go and rescue them, and we have to rescue the planet, and we are the gods, and it's our job to save the planet. It's our job to save other countries. Mm. And so they have this belief that they're in control, which also makes them feel responsible. So when they hear theories like global warming, it fits right into their mindset, their belief that they are these all-powerful gods and that they need to control the climate. And it also makes them feel guilty, right? Yeah, they say, whoa, we've had a hurricane and people were hurt, then it must be our fault somehow. So they take blame and they take responsibility and they attack anyone who questions this belief. So I think there's many different psychological aspects which make this attractive to people on the left. And I see it all the time in people I'm surrounded with. Mm. You know, they want to believe they're gods. They want to believe they're all powerful. And this gives them that, wow, we control all this. We're causing all these problems. And we can stop it by doing things like pumping dust up into the stratosphere. Right? And it's sort of a mass delusion. And it's pretty hideous. It's a pretty ugly mindset, and it's so pervasive too. This belief that they want to believe that they control the climate, even though there's no evidence to support that idea.
And it's curious too, because I have a lot of lefty friends, and they're just sweet, compassionate people, and I love them. But it's like I don't know. It's turned in, as you said, it really is a religion, and some of them get like, you know, I don't know, just aggressive about it, you know, that I've never seen that kind of aggression out of them.
Yeah, well,
it's really, you know, interesting. Yeah,
they're intellectually superior, right? They believe they're intellectually and morally superior. Anyone who with a different opinion, it's because they're evil. You know, I get called this all the time. People always tweet me and say, you're obviously being paid off by big oil. You're going to be tried for crimes against humanity. You know, you're a bad person. You know, why are you doing this to the planet?
Sure.
You know, the assumption is that anyone who questions their belief system must be evil and they must have nefarious intentions. It can't just be that I'm telling the truth. that would never ever come to their mind to think that they have this automatic assumption that anyone with a different opinion is inherently evil.
And I think it's fair too, in my opinion, for what it's worth, is the big picture. It doesn't look like the political left per se are driving this thing. I think it's more internationalists who couldn't care less about the left or right. The left just seems to be their lapdogs at the moment, you know, that they've co-opted the whole
right.
They've co-opted these people, but I don't think the left is actually, you know, the people trying to get Donald Trump out or pushing the global warming thing. It's more big picture globalists, you know, the Monsantos and the whatever, you know, the CIA and the dollar people, yeah, and the banks, and, you know, the people, you know, the globalists, you know, that they want one world stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, the lefties I know, which is a lot of them,
you know,
they get their information from National Public Radio.
I know. You know,
if I tell them anything which goes against what they heard on National Public Radio, it's like they won't even hear it. It's like they're being so whoever's controlling National Public Radio is controlling a huge section of the population.
Really? Well, yeah. You know, that's one of my spiritual exercises I do, Tony, to listen to NPR in the car, and I just practice and not reacting to them. And I'm getting pretty good because every story is about, you know, a coup d'etat on President Trump and the climate and, you know, the black and the whites and separating this and
right. Did they ever get story, through one sentence without the word race, gender, or climate in it? I don't think they do.
Well, God love them. You know, they're out there like trying to convince everybody that they really care about racism and the black and white and everything. And they're the ones promoting it. They're the ones who want to separate people. Not any, you know, they bring it up more than anybody. Reparations for slaves and whatever. And so many people in colleges and women. Oh, the women thing. Oh, my goodness. They're not making as much money as the man. And, you know, they just don't quit. They don't quit.
And if you look at what really hurts poor people, it's this climate stuff. You know, because we have everything depends on having affordable, low cost energy, right? Mm-hmm. And we've got that in this country. But what these people want to do is they want to cut off all of the low cost sources of energy, which the developing world needs desperately. You know, the developing world needs low cost coal and they need low cost natural gas. Mm-hmm. And by trying to raise the prices, you know, Barack Obama, and he, I don't know if you ever saw this interview he made with the San Francisco Chronicle in 2008 during the campaign, he said, my plan of cap and trade will necessarily make electricity prices skyrocket.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I think I've got that in my videos. And if you think about what would that do to poor people? You make energy prices skyrocket, you make it so that poor people can't feed their homes, they can't keep their children warm, they can't get to work, they can't maintain a job. And it's even worse in the developing world where they desperately need energy to, you know, in
just to
Africa,
survive.
They desperately
need. But you know what they're going to say? If you say that to the socialist folks, they're going to say, well, there's green stuff, you got wind farms, and you got solar, it'll be fine, and it'll be clean, and you won't poison the air with coal. That's what they'll say.
Yeah, well, the right now, you know, people in Africa are cooking. They cook with dung. A lot of people with dung. You have these women developing respiratory diseases in their 20s because they're indoors cooking with dung with all this smoke. If they had natural gas to cook with, they wouldn't be suffering these problems, right?
Yes,
the poor people in the developing world are getting hurt tremendously by this global warming insanity. But, you know, this is something you try to explain this to lefties and they don't get it. You know, the same people that, you know, how many tens of millions of African children have died because we banned DDT? because we made DDT unavailable. You know, malaria. How many of them died of malaria because we banned, you know, we kept DDT around long enough to wipe out malaria in the Western world, but not long enough to allow the Africans to
wipe it out. Well, I don't know if your term is correct, if you don't mind, Tony. I don't think a chemical wipes out a virus or whatever these mosquitoes were carrying. That's not logical.
Well, that's what happened.
Maybe it must have protected. You say the DDT thing protected a lot of people from getting the malaria thing, but then the DDT is like, man, it gets you on your body and you pass it to your kids. It's bad stuff.
That may be true, but we used to have terrible malaria problems in the United States, and we wiped them out with the use of DDT. That's why we don't have malaria in the United States anymore.
You say the DDT killed the mosquitoes?
Yeah, we don't have those mosquitoes in the United States anymore because we wiped them out with DDT. But if you look through all newspapers, malaria was a terrible problem in the United States, 120 years ago.
I know it was. Yeah, I'm not sure about all these little... Oh, well. What else? I had something else I want... Oh, yeah, you know what's curious, too? What's going on in the media, and it's so much of it is hidden. You know, it's like stealthy, right? I watched a really beautiful documentary the other night, and it was all about these sea lions they would come on shore and just be a kabillion of them for some reason. It doesn't normally happen. Well, who knows if it does? But then they began to jump off cliffs and stuff because they just got confused. There were so many of them, and it was just tragic. It was just terrible. And you saw all these sea lions. And at the very end of this documentary, they said that the reason why the sea lions, the first time they mentioned it, are coming ashore is because of global warming. Wait a minute, what have I just been taken here?
Yeah, well, so it's interesting. So it's actually, I wish I could remember where I saw it, but I think it was in the 1970s during the global cooling scare, the BBC did the same documentary about the walruses or whatever.
Did they?
Jumping off cliffs.
Did they really?
So there's nothing to do with global warming. It's just something that they do once in a while for some reason.
They get bonkers,
That was during the global cooling scare. But I think if you did an internet search for that, you would probably be able to find that video. But
Very clever, very well done, man. They scammed me, but you know.
Yeah.
Well, Tony, you're a very interesting fellow to talk to. I appreciate you being on the show today. We'll put all your links up so folks can find you. Just for fun, and I know you're a scientist, but just for fun, if you're on a game show, right, and you could come up with the right answer and the host knew the right answer, right, for $1 million, and they asked you, what do you think the Earth is going to be cooler today or hotter today 20 years from now, what would you say?
I wouldn't wager again.
I know, but you're on a game show, so you got to come up with some. What would you guess?
That's one of the things about me is that I
you
sort
just
of
can't go there, right?
I can't say anything which I don't believe.
Okay,
and
good for you.
I would just it doesn't the money doesn't matter to me. I would just say I have no idea.
You have no idea. I don't want your $1 million. Well, good for you. That shows a guy with a lot of character, a lot of bad things. All right.
I mean, if you want to make money in this climate business, you do it by being an alarmist, right?
Uh-huh.
There's billions of dollars out there. If I wanted to make money off this, I would be on the other side. Everything I've done so far has been off of small donations on my blog.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'm actually hoping that's going to change in the near future. But for the last 12 years, it's been all pro bono or small donations. If I wanted to make money doing this, I would have been on the other side. Obviously, that's not what I'm in it for.
Yeah, so. Obviously. What would you do on the other side? In other words, you would do studies and stuff and get grants and all that.
Yeah, right. Or even better, you know, I'm a fairly good communicator. I could just go out and be like a Al Gore scamster.
Sure.
I mean, I could have made tons of money.
I mean, you could go on CNN every day, dude. You'd be just a rock star.
Yeah, so but it's not in my nature.
I know.
You know, I can't lie, so I would never do that. So I tend to support the, and I like Bill Gray. Bill Gray, he went, like I said, he went the last 30 years of his life without any government funding. He self-funded his research. He self-funded his students. You know, that's the kind of integrity I want to be remembered as having. You know, I everywhere I go, I tell people what an amazing giant of a man Bill Gray was. And, you know, if I could get half the accolades he did, you know, when I pass on, I would be thrilled.
Well, you're doing good stuff. We appreciate your clarity and your approach to this thing. So it's fun having you here. Thanks a lot. Let us know if we can do anything to, you know, help get the word out on this, because it's a huge deal, as you said.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, Patrick.
Yeah, appreciate been a pleasure.
Having the opportunity.
Sure. Sure. Tony Heller, realclientscience.com. That was pretty cool. You want to pass this on to everyone that you care about. Now, be kind with your with the socialists who believe in this stuff, because if you get all snarky and say you're stupid and you don't know what you're talking about, don't do that. Don't do that. There are brothers and sisters, and you want to just help them maybe to educate a little bit. Maybe you crack a few cosmic eggs and get some ahas, and then you've helped one person just to open up a little bit and not buying all this silly stuff. Well, I love you very much. Thank you for being here. We appreciate your ongoing support. Well, you've asked for it. Barbara Frank is going to be back tomorrow, and she's the parasite lady in your head and your face. And we've had some very curious experiences here in my household. And if you have some questions for Barbara Frank, please email them in or call up tomorrow. Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. So she's going to be here, return engagement. She's pretty interesting, very interesting lady. And you can warm up for the show tomorrow by listening to the one we did with her about maybe about a month ago, Barbara Frank. So I love you. Take care. Let me know if I can help with anything. OneRadioNetwork.com. And may the blessings be.
Know the source. One Radio Network.